You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with RAFA, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today, we're in Morzine.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in Morzine, Richard, by the river, underneath the mountains, outside the Palais des Sports.
And the rain has stopped.
At last. We got very wet this afternoon, didn't we? My shoes are extremely wet.
I'm squelching as I walk around. You can probably hear me. Give us a tale of the attack, please, Lionel.
Okay, the penultimate stage of the Tour de France, stage 20 from Megève to Morzine, 146.5 kilometres, the last stage in the Alps, of course. It was rainy on and off, and particularly heavy rain in the final couple of hours of racing. A huge break of 37, I think it was, went clear. A lot of the usual suspects in it, including Harlinson Pantano, Pierre Rolland, Julian Alaphilippe, Rui Costa, Vincenzo Nibali, Thomas de Gendt, and Jon Izagirre, remember that name. Roman Kreuziger of Tinkoff was also in it, and as the lead got to around the 6-7 minute mark, he'd moved up to second place overall in the virtual GC. Bit of drama in the virtual GC there. But after the top of the Col de la Rama,
someone's been paying attention.
Local pronunciation of Rama. With 50 kilometres to go, Kreuziger was back down to 10th place overall as the gap had closed. On the Rama, Thomas de Gendt was away on his own, chased by Rolland, who crashed really hard yesterday. So that was a really courageous ride by the Cannondale rider, and Rui Costa. But it was on the Joux Plan that it all sorted itself out. That was the final climb. Pantano and Alaphilippe were away together for a while, having caught and passed the others. Alaphilippe looked great, didn't he? He kept dropping Pantano, but the Colombian kept coming back. And then Nibali rode up and passed them. Alaphilippe was dropped, but then Jon Izagirre fought his way up. And as they went over the top, it was Nibali, Pantano and Izagirre. The Basque didn't hang around on the descent. He dropped the other two in the rain and soloed to a stage win for Movistar. There were no attacks on the Joux Plan for the GC. The riders took very few risks on the descent. Froome was always led by several Sky riders, notably Geraint Thomas, as they made their way down. So Froome is going to win the Tour de France tomorrow. He's 4 minutes and five ahead of Romain Bardet, with Nairo Quintana third. There was a bit of a shake-up in the overall places, though. Fabio Aru lost 13 minutes and has slipped out of the top 10. And Joaquin Rodriguez... 17. I think he was 17 down on the stage, but lost 13 on the GC group.
Apologies,
you know,
Lionel.
It doesn't really matter what you lost to Izagirre, does it? Anyway, Joaquin Rodriguez has climbed up into seventh place in his final tour before retirement. Peter Sagan will win the points competition. Rafał Majka is the king of the mountains. Adam Yates is the best young rider and fourth overall. Tomorrow, Paris.
You said there were no attacks on the Joux Plan. Barker Mollema, bless him, did have a go. He then was dropped and slipped down to 11th. Feel desperately sorry for Barker Mollema. Daniel Freeb tweeted last night about, you know, that he's been one of the heroes of this tour and a joy to deal with, and he has been. And, you know, it's a real shame he couldn't hang on to his podium position, because I think the way he'd ridden up till Friday really merited finishing on the podium. And it's an odd podium in a way. I mean, you know, Chris Froome in his press conference paid tribute to the way that Bardet had ridden the race. And you know, you could say he rode it in a similar way to the way that Nibali rode the Giro, really saving his bullets for these 4 days in the Alps that everybody said would be crucial. Froome, of course, came to the Alps already with a huge cushion, but the shake-up behind him has been quite dramatic, the way that that's changed over the last few days in the Alps. It's the consolation. These are the consolation prizes, of course. But Bardet in second, and Quintana third. And, you know, before we got to the Alps, that wouldn't have been necessarily people's prediction.
No, well, yesterday, every single position in the top 10, except Chris Froome's first place, changed hands. And today there was another little shake-up. Bardet, had the weather not been quite so bad today, he may well have tried again. But I think the problem was that the rain was so heavy, the descent was so treacherous, it was actually too much of a risk to take. Had it been a little bit half and half as it was yesterday, maybe rain with the roads wet and dry, or just less standing water on the roads, there would have been more of an incentive. But they were picking their way down so gingerly, weren't they?
And I think
by then you're holding a good hand and you stick with what you've got.
I mean, had Bardet gone and taken risks that might have cost him his second place overall, if he'd crashed, Froome wouldn't have had to follow him. He could have just picked his line down. and taking it very easily. I said to you, Lionel, as we drove the course today, you know, this was a tough stage, and with lots of sort of potential hazards. The climbs were hard, the descents were difficult, and to finish the race effectively with a descent down to Morzine was a very bold move. It didn't really come off in the sense that, as you say, I think conditions were too dangerous to really encourage actual racing down there. And had it been drier, maybe we would have seen people racing down into Morzine, and it would have been very dramatic. As it was a little bit of a damp squib, I think.
It was, yeah.
A great battle for the stage win, and yeah, that was really good. You know, I mean, Alaphilippe has been fantastic this tour. The way he's ridden, the attitude he's had has been great. Pantano's been also extremely strong, and unusual for a Colombian that he's got good racecraft, and he's not necessarily always the quickest uphill, and he's pretty good at pacing himself and going downhill as well. Nibali was a surprise because he looked very strong when he bridged up to Pantano and Alaphilippe. But again, you know, in the same way that Bardet has got his timing just right in the context of the stage, you know, microcosm of the overall, Izaguirre got his timing just right. He was the last man up to that group and attacked on the descent. And Nibali, who's such a famous, renowned descender, seemed to be taking it pretty gingerly. And Izaguirre was flying into Morzine.
Well, Izaguirre was pushing it, wasn't he? There were some corners that he was really, I think, on the limit of what was possible in the wet. Nibali didn't look like he fancied it quite as much, and you can't really blame them because
he's got the Olympics to think
exactly,
of as well.
Exactly, yeah, and that's only a couple of weeks away now. So, yeah, it was an intriguing battle for the stage win, and Movistar have got themselves something out of the race, you know, as a stage win. They haven't won anything else,
no,
have they? No other stage wins. And Quintana has very, very quietly ridden his way onto the podium without being
his
best.
He's ridden Ala Zubeldia onto the podium.
He has, hasn't he? Yeah, Ala Zubeldia, which is to ride almost anonymously, but climb high up the GC. I mean, Chris Froome mentioned in his press conference that he didn't feel that Quintana was the same threat that he had been in 2013 and 2015. Obviously, Quintana will be back.
I think Quintana's had an off year this year by his standards. A few people were asking on Twitter who's been the most Ala Zubeldia rider in the tour. And in past years, it has been Bauke Mollema, actually. He's been sort of Ala Zubeldia. It's very disrespectful, that, because Heimer Zubeldia is an extremely good rider, very consistent over many years, and he's also a very nice chap. However,
it's just a joke, isn't it?
The Ala Zubeldia award, I think, goes to Louis Menkes.
Yeah, Louis Menkes.
He's eighth overall. You know, he's a young rider. He was second in the under 25, isn't it? Under 25 for best young rider.
Yep, that's
something
right.
Around that. And he's ridden extremely well to finish eighth.
Yeah, eight. He's on the same time, though, as Rodriguez. Maybe he'll attack on the Champs-Élysées tomorrow to gain a second and move up to seventh, but probably not.
But I guess Jon Izaguirre is now the winner of the separate Izaguirre classification.
Oh.
He wins best Izaguirre
jersey. Indeed. He does indeed, yeah. I think a stage win means that wherever they are in the overall, I can see Jon Izaguirre is 47.
You had one job, Lionel.
Yeah, well,
you had one job, and that was to keep your eye on the Izaguirre classification.
I have more than one job, unfortunately, Rich.
Well, listen, while you're searching for that, I spoke to Luke Rowe on the finish line. He's been a valuable teammate to Chris Froome, of course, and he'd literally just crossed the line when I caught up with him. Here is Luke Rowe. I don't know if you know, but Chris obviously had an uneventful day today, and he's won the tour effectively.
Did you say uneventful?
Well, pretty uneventful. Oh, I mean, relative to yesterday.
Yeah, no, I think it was, you know, with the lead he had, it was just always a side of, always a case of, you know, staying on the side of caution. We said even on the descents, even on the uphills, nothing crazy all day. And you've won the Tour de France. We're in the position where we didn't have to do anything crazy, just a case of, you know, 145 kilometre team time trial, and you know not lose. You still wouldn't lose 4 minutes. So we rode, you know, sensibly, and you know, and the descents didn't take any risks, and yeah, we've done it finally. And
was it last night? Was there, you know, when you looked at what had happened, it must have made today quite a nervous proposition.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not over till the fat lady sings, and I think just having that little tumble yesterday just made you realise, you know, anything can happen, and just makes you realise how brittle we are, and it can all be over like that. 3 weeks hard work. So yeah, it did, you know, put a bit of nerves in the team, but you know, I wouldn't say we were nervous before the stage. We're just looking forward to just getting it done and you know, bringing it home, we kept saying.
So the very mature Luke Rowe, it's been, you know, I remember when he turned pro for Team Sky, 2012 I think it was, and he was a kid, and he's matured very impressively over the few years since then, and become a very valuable member of the team, and a road captain, as we've mentioned before. And yeah, he wasn't sure exactly. I said to him, it was an uneventful day for Chris Froome, and he thought I said another eventful day. So it was a moment of brief panic, but he was obviously happy that Froome had come home safely. And can you give us an Izaguirre update?
I can, yeah. A bit of breaking news from 3 days ago. Gorka Izaguirre pulled out of the tour after a crash very early on Wednesday's stage.
In the first kilometre.
Pretty disappointed to have not kept up.
Shouldn't that have been in the tail of the etap that day?
Well, we've been very slack with the Izaguirre classification. That does ring a bell, actually. I do remember reading that, but I think events overtook us, and I've really not had my eye on the Izaguirre.
No, I mean, because that was one thing that you were supposed to be keeping an eye on.
I know,
Lionel.
I know.
You know,
but on what day could we
disappointing?
What day could we have mentioned that? Really,
it's a shame to end the tour on such a bum note.
I know. Coverage of the Izaguirre classification.
I hope he's all right, Gorka.
Yeah, well, it does mean that his brother Jon is a convincing winner in the Izaguirre classification, stage win, and 47th overall at the moment, I think. So, well done to him.
Well done, Jon.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
A reminder that you can become a friend of the Cycling Podcast and gain access to 11 friend specials. We have released 8 this year, and we released 11 last year. And most nights on the Tour de France, we're playing short extracts from those specials. Tonight's is from last year, and it is our perk, the Podcast Independent Reform Commission. It was our response to the CERC, which was obviously the UCI's investigation into doping. And this was a huge 2-hour-plus episode, exhaustive look at the subject of doping and where we're at now. Now let's hear a little extract from that.
So without ethics, without integrity, it's not sport, it's theatre, or worse, it's pantomime.
You know, they feel like, well, what am I going to contribute? I've never even seen a needle. I've never even seen doping occur.
You cannot solve a problem of doping. There's still the same people in the sport.
What I criticise is a journalism which is influenced by particular marketing interests, which is not independent enough.
I trust them, and I believe that what they're doing it clean.
Become a friend of the podcast for 2016. For £10, you'll have access to our Friend Specials, 11 in-depth episodes that will take you even further inside the sport. All our Friend Specials are now available on your mobile device. Our 2015 Friend Specials are also still available for £5. To sign up, visit www.thecyclingpodcast.com. Eurosport, the home of cycling.
And now, Pédaleur du Charme.
Thank you to Eurosport for sponsoring us throughout the Tour de France. We've done a couple of Facebook Lives in conjunction with Eurosport. That's been a lot of fun. Hopefully we can do that again. But they also sponsor our daily Pédaleur du Charme award. And they actually came up with their own nomination today, Eurosport. Warren Barguil for giving Fabio Aru a push on a climb.
Forwards or backwards?
Forwards, yeah, forward push.
Yeah, nice.
Odd
nice.
Thing to do by Warren Barguil.
Yeah, I'm not sure about all this pushing other riders and
he
stuff.
Is
it's, you know, it's a race, isn't it? I mean,
yeah,
I
it's
don't
odd,
know.
Isn't it?
I don't know.
Strange.
The world's going mad.
Yeah, however, you know. Since Eurosport a lot of people nominated.
Charming.
Paddy Curley said for the whimsical flaner. He is, of course, the original whimsical flaner. Ian Thomas also. Peter Dash suggested Pantano, but a lot of people also went for Peter Sagan, just for being Peter Sagan.
Well, he got in the break yet again, and he was doing a job of work for his teammate, Roman Kreuziger, wasn't he? Trying to drag Kreuziger
as well.
Yeah, trying to drag Kreuziger into a high overall position. And Kreuziger's now 10th overall. So I'm
pretty sure Sagan has already won the Pedler de Charme. We haven't got a T-shirt to him. We'll try tomorrow. We'll try to get one to Warren Barguil and to Peter Sagan. I'm sure we owe others as well. Have we got an extra large for Peter Sagan?
Wow, he would just have to, his arm muscles would just have to burst out in sort of incredible Hulk fashion, I think. Anyway, Chris Froome going to win the Tour de France for the third time in his career tomorrow. His press conference was, it was interesting enough, wasn't it? He's said a few things. I mean, it was a strange one, really. I mean,
it was strange, wasn't it? It was very
quite
flat.
Downbeat. Yeah, it was very flat. It was weird.
There was no edge to it at all. I mean, often in the Tour winners' press conferences, there is a sort of a free
atmosphere.
Soul.
Yeah.
We're in Morzine, where, of course, 10 years ago, Floyd Landis staged his miraculous recovery and won the stage and to the yellow jersey. And I think the strangest winners' press conference I've ever been to was Floyd Landis in 2006. And, you know, he was asked about whether he was, what his feelings were about the fact that Jan Ullrich and Ivan Basso were both thrown off the race on the eve of the race for being involved in a doping case, the Operation Puerto case. And his response was, no one wanted to see those guys go. You know, we were all very sorry to see those guys go. And people were just kind of scratching their heads going, well, what kind of answer is that? You know, if these guys have been cheating, then surely you're glad that they're not taking part in the event. Anyway, mine was just... You know, we're in the same press room, same finish, same wobbly bridge up there, and lots of memories flooding back from that day, I suppose. But tonight's press conference with Chris Froome, very different, a very different affair, very sort of quiet.
He did say a few things. I mean, just as he was talking, Chris Froome, it just struck me that this has been a tour of really five moments for him, hasn't it? First of all, the descent after the little attack on the top of the Col de Peyressourde in the Pyrenees, and the descent down into Luchon, which attracted a lot of interest because we hadn't seen Chris Froome really descend in that fashion before. We've seen plenty of other riders do it, but sitting on the top tube, pedalling, it looked quite ungainly, but obviously very effective. Then, of course, there was the crosswind stage into Montpellier, where Froome, Geraint Thomas, Bodnar and Peter Sagan got away, and you saw the yellow and the green jerseys off the front on a flat stage. Then, of course, the unforgettable running on Mont Ventoux. We will never forget that. Then winning the mountain time trial to really put the seal on the Tour de France victory. And finally, riding Geraint Thomas' bike to the finish at Saint-Gervais-les-Bains yesterday. So it's been a tour of moments, but he hasn't really had to do all that much.
He was asked if he regretted not winning an uphill finish.
Yeah.
He was also asked what the organisers could do to make the race more interesting.
Yeah.
And he was asked whether power meters should be banned. He said, I don't really use my power meter when I'm racing, ride on feel and instinct. Not sure about that. But no, I'm sure he does. But I think that the team sort of knows that the sort of pace to ride at, the effort to be making in order to be able to sustain that pace for the length of the climb and deter attacks, or at least be able to reel them in if they go. I mean, Froome himself mentioned that smaller teams might be an idea. You know, that was up to the UCI, but he didn't rule out that as being a good idea. It was sort of damned with faint praise, his rivals, by saying that it had been a great fight for the minor placings.
Yeah.
Which was a bit, you know, kind of...
He also answered the question of whether he would broaden his horizons and perhaps focus on the Giro or the Vuelta or other races. And he said, well, he's certainly not going to be concentrating on the classics. He says the Giro is very difficult to target because it comes before the Tour de France. The Vuelta he'll think about after the Olympics, so possibly, you know, he may well do that. But he did also say that the Tour de France is a race that he will focus on for the next, well, he said five or six years, if he can be on the start line giving it his best shot. And I think that's really, for Chris Froome, the Tour de France is the only race that he's going to really take as seriously I don't imagine
he was also
broadening out.
Ambivalent on whether he'd ride the Vuelta. I thought he was definitely going to ride the Vuelta.
I think that certainly doesn't look as
sure about that. He is riding in London next weekend.
He's going to do the Ride London, and he said he wants to race in Great Britain because he hasn't been able to. It's never really worked out. He doesn't do the national championships because he'd have to travel from the south of France to the UK and back again before the tour.
It's his first time racing on British roads since the 2014 Tour de France, wouldn't it?
I think it will be, yeah. Mm. And he never manages to do the Tour of Britain because he's been doing the Vuelta. So maybe that will change as well. But he'll be in London, he says, a week tomorrow, next Sunday, for Ride London. So big chance for British fans to see him there. Just one last thing on Chris Froome's press conference, and something that backs up the point you've made, Richard, about how single-minded and focused Team Sky are. Sergio Henao became a father for the first time a few days ago and mm-hmm. stayed on the race. And, I mean, he would obviously have known, presumably, that the due date fell during the Tour de France. But that's quite...
I think with these things you do know in advance.
Well, what I'm saying is presumably it wasn't unexpectedly premature, the baby. Oh,
well,
but anyway.
Yeah, okay.
But that does... You know, that's quite a commitment to Chris Froome and to the Tour. And he told Chris Froome that he wants to take the yellow jersey all the way to Paris and see the job through.
Presumably he wouldn't have been selected if he'd said he was going to leave if his baby was born during the Tour. Because then you would pick someone else, wouldn't you?
I would suggest that probably would be the case, yeah.
Francois, your contractual obligations are finished with the Cycling Podcast for this Tour de France. But we thought, you know, we couldn't resist this opportunity to grab you for a final word. Roman Bardet held on to second overall. I imagine he and France will be very pleased with that.
Yeah, he was certainly. I mean, looked absolutely thrilled. He had a little press conference. It's very strange because most of the time you have the yellow jersey press conference and that's it. You know, there's no press conference for the second place. But there was a little, how could I say, French exception today. And he had his press conference. Yeah, he looks really thrilled, delighted. He explained why it happened. He was, lots of hard work. And also the interesting thing is, yeah, he said, you know, he, and that's something I tend to hear more and more often from riders. He said he had put the Tour de France into perspective. Mm-hmm. It's just a sport, it's just a game. You know, your life does not depend mm-hmm. on it. And... well, he said he was the key for his success, his second place. And, yeah, he had interesting reflections about the state of French cycling as well, saying, you know, only one stage win and, I had an excellent tour. The other French guys had a, so-so tour. But he said it doesn't mean anything. There's so many, all the best riders are here. There's so many stages you can win. And he said, to quote him exactly, he said, I don't think we're still in the top flight, French cycling, but we're on our way to it, and we'll see it in the future. So,
but I think there were something like 15 nationalities won. I could be wrong with that, but there were the stages, with the exception of Great Britain, obviously, British riders won 5-6 stages between them. That does that not mean, I'm just working this out in my head, that every other stage is run by a different nationality? And so you could say that no countries are in the top league, that the success is very evenly spread now, and that's reflected in the overall classification as well.
Well, evenly spread, as you say, well, that's a very British remark, you know. You've got a third of them, so it's not equally spread. We have to make sure, you know, especially after Brexit, we talked about it at the start of the tour, we must make sure this never happens again, you know.
Well, just on AG2R, Roman Bardet's team, they were absolutely delighted at the finish line. They put three riders in the break today, didn't they? Villermoz, Gauthier,
and Villermo.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you're right, it's Villermo.
Is
you learnt your lesson, that's good.
Oh, no. But apparently locals leave off the Z, and other French people sometimes pronounce a Z. Oh,
to be honest, I think it depends on the valley you come from, you know. So, right. let's say exactly what you want.
Well, I'm from the Chiltern, so I shall say Villermoz. Gauthier was also in there, and Ben Gastauer. They put three riders up the road in that break, presumably just in case might have worked out that Bardet felt like attacking on perhaps a second last climb, or, I mean, it didn't work out, but they were clearly active. And there was a really nice atmosphere at the finish. The soigneur and the press guy from AG2R were all waiting by the barriers while Romain Bardet was on Eurosport, French Eurosport, sitting under a sort of leaking tent there near the finish line. And then when Bardet had finished on TV, he came over to the barriers and they all high-fives, hands slaps on the back, hugs, and I grabbed a quick word with AG2R's Luxembourg rider, Ben Gastauer. Your team leader is going to finish second on the podium in Paris. How did it feel?
Great. That's fantastic. We were fighting for that for 3 weeks, so now everybody's super happy. It's perfect.
With the weather forecast today, was the team very nervous this morning?
Yeah, we were a little bit nervous, but we were... Yeah, yesterday was a great day, so today we said, okay, we have just to see to keep the second place, and everybody did a great job, and yeah, so it was, even if the weather was bad, it was a good day.
And what is Roman like as a team leader and a teammate?
He's a great team leader. He says what he wants, and everybody is doing it, and everybody was believing in him, and so it was a great team for all the 3 weeks, and we were all fighting for him, and yeah, the result is perfect.
And do you think this will give him the belief that he can win the Tour de France one day? The whole of France will be willing it to happen, won't they?
Yeah, the whole France wants it, but we also want it, but yeah, it's the race. We have to see in the next year how it's going to be, but he showed us that he's really strong and that he can do it, but then yeah, it's the race. You never know what is happening.
And lastly, how will you celebrate in Paris tomorrow?
Yeah, we are going to celebrate with the whole team, with the sponsors and everybody, and it's going to be a great evening.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Congratulations.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
Thank you very much to Rafa, our wonderful sponsors, and must also again mention their More Than a Race series of articles on rafa.cc, and today's is all about eating, so all about what riders eat, especially on the go. That's quite loose. We're just scrolling through it now, aren't we, Lionel? Because I must admit that I haven't looked at it yet, but it's quite interesting.
Yeah,
it's quite.
It looks
Nutella,
all
champagne. Now, mentioning that in your kilometre zero other day.
We've done a couple of kilometre zeros on food over the last couple of years, haven't we?
But yep.
Interesting subject, because obviously I love eating.
Well, that's obvious. Francois has left us now, and we were going to play a Matt White interview. Matt White, sports director at Orica Bike Exchange, and he was cock-a-hoop at the finish because his rider Adam Yates finished fourth, just off the podium, actually. He was only 19 seconds, I think, behind... 21 seconds, apologies, behind Nairo Quintana. Now, if you told Adam Yates or anybody else that Adam Yates would finish within 21 seconds of Nairo Quintana... At the end of 3 weeks.
Yeah, well, so, yeah.
It is what it is.
He probably would have said that.
It is what it is. So, anyway, here is Matt White. You must be pretty happy.
Yeah, over the moon. Fourth place and white jersey, and just the way he's handled the whole three-week experiences. It's been a big, big learning experience for him.
Any wobbles? I mean, he had a difficult day, I think, yesterday. He had a mechanical problem at one point, but were there any moments where you thought, you know, because he said all along he might have a really bad day and lose minutes. Were there moments when you thought, this is the day?
Did he have a bad moment?
Yeah.
Well, not really. I have a lot of faith in Adam, and the way he'd handled the whole 3 weeks, he was rock solid. Rock solid. You know, a bad day losing 30 seconds is not such a bad day. There's always things we can work on, but at the end of the day, His first Grand Tour for general classification, this is the Tour de France, and fourth place, and to be so close to the podium, he should be very, very proud.
Is there a tiny bit of disappointment that he didn't hold on to third?
Well, there's disappointment because when you're in that position, you want to try to win. You want to try to get as good a result as possible, but we're certainly not disappointed in the effort from him or the team. And we can be nothing but very, very happy and excited for the future.
I said all along that he was here, his main focus was a stage win rather than GC, and GC would come if it came.
Yeah.
But he did say also that he wrecked the two time trials, and we thought, does that mean GC is in the back of his mind as well? You can tell us now.
Yeah, we recon more than we let on, that's for sure. You've got to be prepared. You've got to be, and we were prepared. But the one thing is that we didn't know is you don't know you can do general classification until you've done it. Now he's done it. So, but for us not to prepare for the Tour de France as like a general classification rider, you know, it wouldn't give him a fair chance. So yeah, we did some recon, and we prepared to ride GC, but we just weren't making it public.
So for the Vuelta, you've got an incredible track record now in the two GCs so far this year. Vuelta, Simon Yates up for that?
He is, but I think Esteban Chavez will certainly go in as one of the favourites, and I think Simon will have super form to support him in that role.
It creates, you could have three very good GC riders on your hands over the next couple of years. Does that, I guess that's a problem you would like to have?
I don't think it's a problem at all. I think there's three Grand Tours in a year, and regardless of Esteban's or Simon's ride at the Volta, we're not going to be the favourites for the Tour de France next year. So strength in numbers, and these three are very tight as well. We've got a great team, and a very tight team, and there certainly won't be any issues there.
So Matt White there basically admitting that when they said that they were here for stage wins, they weren't telling the whole truth. They had an eye on GC.
Yeah, which is what they did at the Giro as well, when they said that Esteban Chavez was not going for the high overall position. He just wanted to win a stage, and then suddenly he was up in the top five, and then suddenly he was almost winning the Giro, wasn't he? He led it for one day.
Yep, he almost won it, indeed. Until
they've had a very good season, haven't they? Paris-Roubaix.
Mm.
Then an excellent Giro and an excellent Tour.
Well, Adam Yates, I mean, he did, as I said to Matt White there, look like it was catching up with him a bit on Friday. And, you know, I think all of us thought that he would have one bad day, and he hasn't. I mean, his bad day was Friday when he had a bike change, I understand, and then seemed to struggle to get back to the group, and then struggled to hang on to the group, and he got a push at one point from Luke Rowe. He got a handsling, allegedly, well, from Ruben Plaza, his teammate.
Well, whatever went on, he definitely got penalised 10 seconds, didn't he?
So he actually finished 11 seconds by Nairo Quintana. Yeah, and if he'd been 11 seconds, would he have attacked tomorrow on the Champs-Élysées?
Oh, why? We could have got Matt Heyman over the cobbles, you know, forcing a split, and then
those cobbles on the Champs-Élysées are just like Paris-Roubaix.
Brutal.
Yeah, I mean, you said last night Adam Yates would definitely win a Grand Tour in the future. You know, fourth place in particular, it has been claimed by lots of riders over the years who've never bettered that.
I said that at our live event at the Chalet Le Gieta. Which was broadcast on Facebook Live. And I regretted saying it as soon as I'd said it, because you're absolutely right. Young riders, their first big result, then I get irritated that the narrative then becomes about, well, will they repeat that? Will they go on and get a better result? And everything becomes, that becomes almost a sort of, not just a benchmark for them to repeat or beat, but almost a stick to beat them with. And so I regretted kind of saying that, really. I mean, Adam Yates is clearly a very fine talent. What I think he's got that a lot of other young riders don't have is just a temperament for these races. You know, it's been long, it's been tough. He's been in the white jersey since the day the banner collapsed on him at the end of the first week in the Pyrenees. And although the pressure and the profile is not as intense, he still has to do a lot of that media work after the race, doesn't he? He has to go through the mix zone and talk to the TV and then the radio and then the print journalists, and that all takes time. And he's there, you know, at the stage finishes well after his team bus will have gone, so he's getting a lift back to the hotels most nights in a team car. And all of that stress and kind of getting used to that routine, Chris Froome made the point in his press conference how much more comfortable he is with holding the yellow jersey, going through all of those protocols. And Adam Yates has had a little
good experience. You know, I compare him to Robert Miller. Robert Miller finished fourth in the Tour de France when he was 25. That was his second Tour de France. This is Adam Yates's second Tour de France, albeit Robert Miller won stages in 83 and 84 as well. And a similar sort of personality in some ways, taciturn, you know,
blunt,
doesn't suffer fools. If you ask him a question that doesn't make sense, he will let you know, that's for sure. Quite a lot of similarities, just no nonsense, and a similar type of rider, climber, and a little wiry climber. And you know, he's ridden, for me he's been a revelation, because I saw the H-Bullers as guys who could win stages, as they said as they've always said, was their goal. They are good finishers, aren't they? They've got that punch. So a surprising performance, a very good performance, a hugely encouraging performance, but still a long way to go for him to win a Grand Tour one day.
Of course.
Lionel, we've got a long way to go to Paris.
We have, yeah. We've got to drive to Lyon, and we've got to give our hire car back, and we've got to get the TGV up to Paris in the morning in time for La Course, the women's race, of course, which will be lapping the Champs-Élysées in the afternoon. But just before we do go, Sam Bennett made it in the Gruppetto. So did Dan McClay. I tried to grab a word with Dan McClay because, Rich, you spotted the little video of him on Twitter saying Adama to the driver of the voiture ballet, the broom wagon, which he had been in front of for a long way yesterday. Today he wasn't off the back on his own. He was safely in the Gruppetto. But as I approached him at the finish to see if he had a moment to stop and chat, he said, no, mate, I'm freezing cold. Or, no, mate, I'm bloody freezing, was what he actually said. And not surprising, really, because it was pretty chilly up here, and they'd come down that descent having got very wet and cold, and they were a good 35 minutes after the leading group. So although it was a pretty short stage, that still meant that they were out there for how long? They were out there for four and a half hours. Yeah. Mm.
Right, well, we'll get them tomorrow on the Champs-Élysées. Sam Bennett, Dan McClay. Well, because I think their stories are worth telling. We told Sam Bennett the other day in a kilometre zero, and it's brilliant that he's finished the race because he's really struggled through it. And I think he'll and Dan McClay will come out of the race better riders. You know, they always say that, right?
Well, you know, let's not get really carried away, but what I wanted to ask Dan McClay was whether he was suffering really badly off the back, or whether he was actually just saving his legs a little bit and knowing that he was going to be inside the time limit and just not pushing himself too far, knowing that the Champs-Élysées is coming up. Obviously, Mark Cavendish isn't here. There's still some very powerful sprinters left in the race. Marcel Kittel, André Greipel, of course, who hasn't yet won a stage. You know, who else would
Brian
have their eyes
Cockard.
On? Brian Cockard, of course.
Sam Bennett.
John Degenkolb, perhaps, you know. So there'll be a fiercely contested sprint on the Champs-Élysées. And who knows, maybe Dan McClay will be one of them going for the line.
Let's go, Lionel. Thank you very much.
Let's get driving. Thank you.